Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. I guess the big headline coming out of last night's Raw is that Kevin Owens kind of hinted at perhaps not being in the WWE that much longer. And we'll get into that when we get to the actual match that it happened in, or the actual promo that it happened in. But let's start with the very beginning, where we have Becky Lynch going up against Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's Championship. Because I got a lot of messages on this. And people were saying, you know, Marcus, they're going in the wrong direction with Bianca Belair. She's losing too much. They're weakening her. Every week she's losing. She's coming short. Pretty soon she's going to be on the, you know, mid-carder list of the women's division. And I have to tell you, I disagree with this. You can't have it both ways. You can't ask Raw or SmackDown to give you top matches featuring the top athletes going against their top competitors and then say, but I don't want anybody to lose. Because when they do that and they do double disqualification, or they do double count out, or a single count out, or a single disqualification, then you complain and you say, that's a ripoff ending. Well, you can't have it both ways. If you want to see the top people versus the top people, and you don't want to see what you consider a ripoff ending, somebody's got to lose. And right now, it's not going to be Becky Lynch. They don't want Becky Lynch losing yet. So, unfortunately, if you want to see her go up against Bianca Belair, you want to see her go up against Rhea Ripley or whoever else, she's not going to lose. Now, it looks like Liv Morgan may be her next opponent. She's not going to win, obviously. So, now you're going to say, well, that's not a top-quality opponent. I don't want to see that. Well, this is the problem. If you do want to see top flight matches, A-list matches, and you don't want what you consider a ripoff ending, someone's got to lose. Bianca Belair had her title reign. She had her time when she didn't lose at all. Now she's losing some. I'm sure they'll cycle her back up. I thought this was an excellent match to start the show with. I thought this was one of the better women's division matches I'd seen in a while. Actually, I think they work very well together because Bianca Belair sort of concentrates on power wrestling and, you know, highly athletic moves. And Becky Lynch is more of a brawler and more cerebral and, you know, lures her in. And I thought they worked very well together. So I really didn't have a problem with this, Mike. Somebody's got to lose. And obviously it's not going to be the champ just yet.
Right. And the thing is, you know, WWE has another problem, and it doesn't matter right now. It doesn't matter what Becky Lynch does. I mean, you saw how she won the match, right?
Yep.
With a roll up with a handful of tights. No, they want the crowd to boo her, but the crowd cheered her nonetheless. So they have other problems rather than who wins or loses Becky Lynch's matches. You know, they're still trying to get people to boo Becky Lynch, and it's not working.
I agree with that, and she tried her best. I mean, she came out and cut a promo basically saying, I've noticed that people are booing me. Well, I haven't noticed that, unfortunately, because it's not really happening. So, and I noticed that people are getting a little jealous of me and not responding to me the way I used to be responded to. Well, I mean, I'm going to give you brownie points for trying, Becky, but here's the deal. I know that some people have said it was your idea to come back as a heel or that you were very, very psyched to do it. This was a mistake. It was a mistake because any rational thinking person already knew that having a child and going through whatever and getting back in shape and coming back into the ring, you were going to get cheered. Anyone would know that. And rather than to take that character and make that character someone who might have come back too early, really wasn't in perfect Becky Lynch form, and was suffering some doubts about her future and had to really claw her way to the top and take the fans with her on that journey, you chose the second. You chose, give me everything right away and I'll be a cheater and they'll boo me, and you were wrong. I mean, this was a poker bluff, Todd, and they called the bluff and they're losing on it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with Stone Cold Steve Austin turned heel in 2001, fans were still cheering for him. Then a couple of months later, when Hogan returned in 2002 with Hall and Nash, it was hard to boo him, but they were cheering him. They were cheering both of those guys.
It's hard sometimes. You have to have your finger on the pulse of this, and you have to understand that given the circumstances, Mike, this was always going to be a long shot that fans were going to buy into that.
That's right. And think about this. Yeah, they're booing right now. They're booing Seth Rollins, but not really. I mean, you look at the reaction. Yes, booing, but it's not like hardly booing. It's not like meaning it booing, you know? You know, it's like, we got to boo you. You're doing things that want us to make you boo. We got to boo you, but what we really want to do is cheer you, you know?
Yeah, and at least he had a head start. I mean, he was a heel while she was pregnant. He was a heel while she was giving birth, so he had a little head start. She didn't. That's the thing. She comes back, and, you know, it's just, I think it was a mistake. We'll see how this plays out, but I think it was a mistake. Nonetheless, this was a really good match. Now, speaking of which, Big E gets in the ring, and Seth Rollins comes out to address him, saying he's really the face of Raw. And then Kevin Owens comes out, and this is what we were talking about with the title of today's show. Kevin Owens comes out and says, you know, I really should be. There's a good argument to be made that you're both the faces of Raw. I mean, Big E's a champion, so the champion's usually the face. But then again, you know, Becky Lynch is a champion, and she's got a pretty good argument there. And Seth, first time I think I've ever heard anybody acknowledge that there's a relationship there, he says, Seth, you might be interested in that. I don't think anybody else has ever really acknowledged that yet. So I thought that was interesting. Then he says, and, you know, I could be considered the face, but this isn't Mount Rushmore. Now, you know what he meant. Because in AEW, of course, the rumors that he might be going to AEW are circling, and the Young Bucks and him had a faction called Mount Rushmore at one time. And they'd been talking about it online and things, and he said, well, this isn't Mount Rushmore, and I don't know how long I'm going to be, whether I'm going to be here for 3 months or 3 years. Now, the 3 months is pretty accurate. His contract ends in January. So we're into November, December, January. He's exactly right with 3 months. So he brought that up himself, that his contract is basically up in 3 months and he don't know where he's going to be. So if the WWE signed off on that while they're actively trying to sign him, that's unusual. I think that's a little unusual. I think they might have nixed that and said, no, we're not going to go there. It's almost like they wanted to cause that speculation. So given that, I'm starting to believe the opposite of what I'm being told. I'm being told Kevin Owens is leaning very heavily toward not re-signing. After what I saw last night, I'm starting to think the opposite. Because I have no idea why the WWE would allow him to do that without okaying it and realizing the ramifications of it. So it was an interesting little skit there, Mike, and I think that now I'm starting to become convinced that Kevin Owens is closer to signing with WWE than not.
But then again, remember what happened with Moxley? He cut that promo for basically AEW, and they didn't do anything about that, you know. And what did it make us think when he did that, you know? So you really can't say what the WWE is thinking on this because you don't know. Because, I mean, I go back to the whole Moxley incident, right?
Well, yes and no, though, because Moxley cut that video, but they didn't play it in the WWE. You know, it wasn't – so, you know, if they had played it on their show, I would have said, yeah, well, yeah, he's resigning because that's obviously not – they're not going to do that. They didn't play it on their show. He put it on YouTube and stuff, but the WWE never played it. The WWE writes your promos, as Moxley has said many times. They absolutely told Kevin Owens to say that. So that's weird. Plus, they put him in a championship match, which we'll talk about a little later on. To be honest with you, I thought that that being the main event was perfectly acceptable to me. I said, okay, this works out. Kevin Owens is never fought Big E. It will be an interesting match. Is Seth Rollins going to play a factor in it? Probably. We don't know. You know, stay tuned for that. I thought it was fine. I didn't have any problem with it at all. We then get to Austin Theory backstage, and Rey Mysterio is saying, you know, he's very talented, but he's very brash and young, and he thinks he's going to make a name off of me. And then Austin Theory shows up and basically says, look, it's going to be a big honor to wrestle you tonight and beat you like I beat your son. And I never did get a chance to take that selfie with you, but I'll take it tonight after I beat you. Dominic kind of steps in his way, and they have a little bit of a stare down, and Rey Mysterio says, look, many people have tried to do that, and they're gone, and I'm still here. So good luck to you tonight. He then takes some selfies anyway with them in the background. And I think Austin Theory's doing a great job. I really do. This is somewhat different than his character in NXT. And I think it's one of those heels that if you handle this guy right, can be a heel that everybody boos. I don't think it's going to be one of these guys that you say, oh, well, he's going to be a 50-50. He's going to be a gray area. I think they've got themselves a really good heel, Todd. They just got to make sure they handle him right and they don't throw him to the wolves too soon.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, he's not no ordinary heel. He's more like one of those guys. Wise asses, heels, like being cocky, being a wise ass and everything. It's one of those guys who could do that.
Yeah, and unlike The Miz, and unlike some of the other guys who do that cocky heel thing, Mike, he's not funny. So you don't side with him because they're comical or humorous or entertaining. He's more annoying. He's almost like what I would envision Matt Riddle to be if they made Riddle a heel.
Right. He has the feel of MJF.
Yeah, a little bit, yep.
You know, MJF is that guy. He's not funny, and you want to punch him in the mouth, you know. That's what MJF is. That's where I think they're headed with Austin Theory. And you're right, he's totally different than what they were having him do in NXT because he was part of the Johnny Gargano faction in NXT, you know?
Right. And he actually was funny back then to a degree. He's not doing the funny stuff now. He's handling this very well. For somebody who doesn't have a ton of actual experience, I think he's really hitting the nail on the head with this character. And I hope they continue it, and I hope they handle it well. Now, his match against Rey Mysterio was good. It ended with Dominic getting Rey disqualified when Dominic blatantly slapped Austin Theory while Rey was getting ready for the 619. Now, Rey Mysterio has said he's against a feud with his son. I think Rey might just be toying with us because if that's not where this is heading, I don't know where the hell it's heading. Rey seemed upset with Dominic that he would make that move. Now, in all fairness, Austin Theory attacked Dominic first. So Dominic was kind of getting revenge on that, but his hot-headedness and his desire to get revenge cost Rey the match. Now, what I'm hoping is that we get another match, maybe in a pay-per-view or something, where Austin Theory legitimately goes over. That's what Ray's job is at this point, is to get younger talent over. And, you know, this would be a perfect opportunity to climb that ladder a little bit more for Austin Theory. I'm looking at, like, maybe Austin Theory and maybe Damian Priest, because I had thought Karrion Kross, but he's vanished. Don't know where he is. So this could be somebody good for Damian Priest to feud with, Mike.
Right. And, I mean, look, we'll get around to the Damian Priest part of the show, which I liked as well. But, yeah, Damian Priest, this is where this is headed. And, you know, they're starting to develop. And we've said this before, and we said this was a major failing of the WWE, but they're starting to develop these guys that maybe not are that the mid-card guys, maybe upper mid-card guys, that they're maybe one step away from being main event guys. That's where they're going with some of these people, Damian Priest, maybe T-Bar, maybe Austin Theory, you know, those type of guys that we said have been missing in the WWE for a while. Well, I just named three guys there that they're kind of doing that with.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point, because I said the same thing. I'm watching it and I'm saying, for the first time in a long time, I'm starting to anticipate matches. I didn't do that before. I'm saying, oh, Damian Priest could maybe potentially go up against Austin Theory. That would be a good match. Or Karrion Kross against Damian Priest. That would be an interesting match. Or, you know, Austin Theory versus Morrison. That would be a good match. I'm starting to anticipate some matches. That's what you want to do. If you're a wrestling federation, you want to get fans to anticipate matches so that when you give it to them, they're like, oh, I was thinking about that match. And now that match is going to happen. WWE hasn't done that for a long time. For a really long time. So you have to give them credit when they're doing it. They're doing this right. They're handling Damian Priest right. They're handling Austin Theory right. They're starting to get this, that they have to start building some future stars, and they got to do it the right way. Now, if Austin Theory drops to Rey Mysterio next week, then we're going to be on this radio show singing the blues again. So far, it does look like we are going to see the WWE build up these anticipated matches, and that's exactly what we want. Exactly what we want. Now, backstage, we get Carmella and Zelina Vega mutually giving each other props and walking around, and they bump into Rhea Ripley and Nikki Cross, and a little bit of war of the words are exchanged, and they challenge them to a match. And it ends up being a contenders match. I hate these contenders matches, and I'll tell you why. They don't really have any women's tag team, so you already know that Zelina Vega and Carmella are winning, because who else are they going to defend their titles against? There isn't anybody. And to add insult to injury, during this match, the women's division sitting around watching this match, for what reason, I don't know. None of them are tag teams. So why they're watching a tag team title match as if they're next in line or they're scouting their opponent, I don't know, because there is no other tag team there. It didn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's kind of sad that you have to go with Zelina Vega and Carmella as a tag team after Zelina Vega single-handedly won the Queen's Crown and all that kind of stuff. So this was one part of Raw that I really said to myself, I don't know where they're going with this. In the Queen's Crown, why is she now on a tag team? I don't think we got Todd there, so let me go to Mike. Mike, that seemed a little weird.
Yeah, I don't get that. I really don't. And this is one of the few things in Raw that had me scratching my head. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was good on Raw, and we'll get around to it, but this one was, you know, and look, we've said it before, Nikki Cross is doing a very fine job with this. She is now, you can probably call her, she is a superhero now, because she's doing such a good job with it, you know.
Yeah, she's doing a good job. And, you know, Rhea Ripley, I'm not thrilled with her in this position, but it is what it is. But for the life of me, Mike, why the hell were all the women's division standing around watching this match when they're not tag teams?
Right, and it kind of makes you wonder that if they're going to put some of these women together, you know, throw them together as a tag team because they have nobody else.
Yeah, well, you named it exactly right. They don't have anybody else. I mean, this is a mistake from the WWE. They've got to correct this mistake. You've got to get some solid tag teams in there. If you're going to have women's tag team champions, then you have to have women's tag teams. And they can't be solo wrestlers you just throw together on a whim. So, unfortunately, you know, that part of Raw left a bad taste in my mouth. I just thought that was excessively poor booking, excessively poor handling of your division. We then get a backstage with Big E and Chad Gable and Otis. And I thought it was really good. Chad Gable was really good on the mic. I said before, Chad Gable's good on the mic. Way back when he was doing the Shorty Gable thing, he was still good on the mic. Bad image, but he was good on the mic. And he tells him, you know, this is going to be Monday Night Rollins again unless you get some help. And I can give you that help, which Big E kind of scoffs at and says, that's fine, I don't need that. And he ends up challenging him to a match. But what we see here, and again, it seems anticipatory, is Otis kind of sizes himself up against him. And Otis is massive. You know, we always talk about Big E being massive. Otis makes two of Big E. He's massive. And Big E says, what did they do to your face? And I just, you feel it. You feel like that's going to come to a head. That's going to be a collision of two massive dudes at some point. So they go out, and it's Chad Gable against Finn Balor. And they've done a good job in the sense that Finn Balor's lost a couple of matches, and I said, there's no way he's losing this match. There's no way in God's green earth he's losing this match unless they've just given up completely on Finn Balor. But they made me believe at some point in this match, maybe he's going to. Maybe they're just going to use Balor as a mid-carder because it seems like they got some plans for Chad Gable. And this was a very strong match. And if this does not send a signal to the WWE to not only re-sign Chad Gable, who they're now saying he also is looking to probably get out of his contract, you need to re-sign Chad Gable. You need to give him a decent image. You need to get him. This is the guy who always should have been Kurt Angle's son anyway, not Jordan. You need to give him a decent image, get him out there, and let him wrestle. Because Chad Gable, given the right motivation, the right characterization, and the chance, could be your next Daniel Bryan. And that's saying something, because Daniel Bryan's one of the top wrestlers in the world. And I think Chad Gable could come close to filling those shoes if you gave him a chance. Right now, you're not giving him a chance. But this was a great match, Mike, from start to finish. And I'm not normally into Finn Balor matches, but I thought this was the perfect opponent for him, and I thought it was a very good match.
And you know what? I still say what we said before. Finn Balor should be a heel, and he should have a couple, two, three dudes around him, you know, helping him out. But that's neither here nor there. And I like what they're doing. I tell you what, I like what they're doing with the whole Alpha Academy thing, and to tell you the truth, there really hasn't been an end to it, because the obvious end to it is having either him or Otis win a singles championship. That's the obvious end to that whole Alpha Academy deal.
Yeah, either that or, you know, one of them turning on the other one. But, yeah, it looks like they're going to maybe push Otis up there to possibly fight Big E. Now, I don't think Otis is going to win, but I think that'd be an okay match. I'd be into that match. Chad Gable, Todd, highly underrated. I think they should use him more, and I definitely think they should make a very strong bid to sign him.
I think you're absolutely right there, like you said, with Chad Gable. Not to say he's a great wrestler and everything, and I think he makes a good mouthpiece for Otis as well. You know, if you put Otis and Big E in a match against one another, you will see a great feud right there. The two powerhouses.
I really think you will see a great feud. And to Otis's credit, you know, Otis was great on the mic. But unfortunately, Otis is great on the mic when he's playing a childlike baby face who people can sympathize with. He's real good at that. I don't know if he's real good at being a heel. So to their credit, they're not letting him try. They're just letting Chad Gable do the talking, and he's just making faces and snorting. That's fine. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. We then get the Dirty Dogs versus the Street Profits. And I'll tell you something I liked very much, and I hope the WWE continues to do this to some degree. Matt Riddle was backstage talking to the Dirty Dogs, and they didn't sneak attack him. They didn't beat him down. They didn't do anything else. They were talking to him. And they're just like, well, they tell him you're an idiot. But at the same time, they're saying, look, you got lucky. You won. It's not going to happen again. We're going to go out there and beat the Street Profits, and then we'll beat you. It's simple as that. And you're, you know, and he's being a goofball. And they're just saying, look, I don't know what kind of psycho babble is coming out of your mouth. I ain't got time for your nonsense. I like that the heels and the faces can interact without physical violence all the time. Thought that was a very, very good thing. And the Street Profits and the Dirty Dogs put on a good match. You had Randy Orton at ringside. I had a weird thing happen. I don't know if anybody else happened to, but when Almost came out and distracted the Street Profits, giving the Dirty Dogs a victory, and then he started beating them up, and then Matt Riddle jumped in, and Matt Riddle got beat up. Randy Orton tore off his shirt like he was going to do something, and then instantaneously my television went to a recap of Damian Priest from last week. Almost like they cut whatever happened or was going to happen between Randy Orton and Almost, so I don't even know if anything happened, Mike. I don't think so, but that's what happened on my feed.
That's what happened on my feed, too, and that's a good thing because imaginations run wild in that situation.
Yep.
Is there something supposed to be there? Is there something not supposed to be there? What exactly happened when they cut away? You know, we saw him take off his shirt, and we saw Almost there, and, you know, and what happened, you know? And it could be hundreds of things. Could be tens of things. I don't know. But there was a time when the WWE was great at doing that type of stuff. They haven't been so much lately, except maybe right here, but they haven't been so much lately, you know?
Well, they've definitely kind of teased Almost versus Randy Orton one-on-one at some point. That's an anticipatory match, too. So, see, this is where the WWE is beginning to do their job, finally. We're starting to get these little hints of matches that could potentially happen, and we're looking forward to them, which I actually like. Todd, this was a good match. I'm glad the Dirty Dogs won in a way. It doesn't look like they're going to be underutilized on Raw, which is good.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. It's pretty cool to see, like, a team you haven't seen win in a while, but win a match or so. Maybe sometime, somewhere down the line, you'll get another title shot against RK-Bro or the Street Profits, one of those two teams. You never
know. Plus, you know, Randy Orton put him over, too. Randy Orton said, look, I've known Dolph Ziggler for 20 years, and Dolph Ziggler is the real deal. You know, Dolph Ziggler is not somebody to be taken lightly, and I've been in the ring with Bobby Roode, and he's an athlete. So, anything ever. That's Randy Orton really putting you over. You know, he's not saying, oh, these guys are dirty cheaters, and they can't win without cheating. He didn't say anything like that. He said the exact opposite, actually. So I found that interesting. I think that's a good thing, too. I think that's a positive thing. So I'm happy to see the WWE kind of waking up when it comes to this stuff and giving the fans a little bit more of entertainment value. Now, Damian Priest versus T-Bar. Damian Priest did a really lousy job of explaining his situation. I'm gonna tell you this right now, and it's probably unpopular opinion. I like Damian Priest the other way better. And I'll tell you why. It seemed more natural. This does not seem natural to me. Because once again, I'm saying to myself, if you can psych yourself up to that place, why don't you wrestle like that all the time? if you become so unbeatable and what after you get mad, well, why don't you get out there mad? I mean, it doesn't make a ton of sense. And we've already seen Damian Priest be the exact opposite. I mean, he didn't snap at The Miz. He didn't snap at Morrison, all the things that they did to him. So when he said, oh, it's always been there. Well, I just did a good job of fighting it off. Yeah, I'm not sure I like it. However, I thought T-Bar did a really good job. He knew he was going to lose again. But this was a good match. And this was one of those matches that made me think of, like, a Sheamus type of match. They were pretty stiff with each other. And if you saw Damian Priest's stomach in some of the Instagram posts he posted afterwards, or they posted on WWE's site, he was pretty welted up from the kendo stick shots. And the table shot was a damn good one. And they had some good hard-hitting wrestling in this one. And it goes to show you that Dijakovic can do quite well when he's given something decent to do. Now, you know, he had to lose. I get it. But you could still do something with Dijakovic. You're just going to have to, you know, cycle him back up eventually. But right now they're really pressing Damian Priest. And I was a little disappointed when Apollo Crews came out and basically solidified himself as the next opponent, because I don't know if this is going to be – I don't know if these styles are going to work that well. And with Commander Aziz there, I don't see how Damian Priest is really going to go like psycho and make it work, because he's just going to deck him. I don't know. I would have much rather seen a different opponent right now, but at least on the upside of it, at least they're going to use Apollo Crews again. They haven't forgotten about him. He's in the title picture, Mike, so it is them making use of all the talent they got over here.
And, hey, look, he's one of these guys that he needs to be cycled up again, number one. Number two, he could fit into that role again where, yeah, he's not going to be he's not going to be sniff around Big E or whoever the champion is, the WWE champion. But, I mean, you know, he could be a tag team champion, or he could be a U.S. or Intercontinental champion, you know, that type of thing. And, yeah, he needs to be cycled up, and they need to figure out what they're going to do with General Aziz. Because that guy...
Well, now, if they're smart, Mike, I think what we should see here, you've built up Damian Priest as a guy that when he snaps, he's extraordinarily violent. Maybe if you did some kind of a pre-feud situation where even when he snapped and became violent, he really wasn't able to handle Aziz too well, you could say, well, that's going to be a big ace in the hole for Apollo Crews, because Damian Priest, even when he snapped, Aziz handled him. That guy's huge. He's a monster. And he's on the outside of that ring. And you know, that's got to be a huge distraction, because then we'd say to ourselves, well, okay, maybe Priest is going to drop the belt to Apollo and then feud with Aziz or something. We don't know. So that's what I would do. But it's nice to see them making use of everyone for a change. That's really nice to see. And I know some people have written to me and said, well, where's AJ? How come he doesn't come out with Almost anymore? Here's the deal on AJ. What I'm hearing is he's out for non-injury related reasons. I don't know what that means. Sickness? Got the flu? I don't think he has COVID. Or I think they'd flat out say he tested positive for COVID, so I don't think that's it. So I just, non-injury related could mean anything. It could mean he's got sick. It could mean he's got the flu. It could mean he's not injured, but he's unwell in another way. I don't know. I don't know what it means. He's missed 2 weeks in a row. We'll see what ends up happening. AJ Styles isn't one of those guys who misses a lot of time for no reason, so we'll see. This could be, though, the beginning of them letting that team go, because Almost handled himself okay by himself. I thought the WWE did a good job when he came out and the security was trying to stop him from coming out and all that stuff. They're handling some of their talent better now. Whoever is doing this, whoever's saying, let's bring some of this talent to the front, they're doing it the right way, which is refreshing to see. It really is. We then get to Kevin Owens versus Big E. And I'm not going to lie to you. Kevin Owens, in my opinion, has lost a step or two. Some of his matches just doesn't seem to feel like he's putting 100% into it. And even though this was a perfectly acceptable match and a perfectly good match, there were times in this match where it really did feel like Kevin Owens was just like, yeah, I'm going through my motions. I wish he wouldn't. Now, there could be a reason for this. And the reason is the ending. Seth Rollins interferes, hits Big E, knocks Big E out, basically, in full view of Kevin Owens. And Kevin Owens clearly is torn between what do I do at this point. The referee obviously didn't see it. He's not going to disqualify me. So do I take advantage or do I wait for Big E to get up and refuse to take advantage? And you could see him kind of clearly fighting his demons to decide what to do, and then he covers him. But because he waited a little bit too long, Big E turns it into a little roll-up, and Kevin Owens gets pinned with a roll-up, which is a great ending because it doesn't really make Kevin Owens look like he lost because he was inferior. It makes Kevin Owens look like he lost because he was unsure, and he waited too long, and Big E suckered him in. But what happened afterwards was more important. And that is Kevin Owens instantly apologizes and he tells a lie. He says, I did not see what happened. We collided head to head. I didn't see what Seth Rollins did. That's not true. It's not true. So now I'm saying to myself, Kevin Owens is flat out lying to Big E and Big E is not buying it. For once, a babyface is not a complete idiot. And Big E saying, nah, I ain't buying it. I'm not buying it. I know you and I know what you did. Kevin Owens again keeps trying to apologize. Big E ends up giving him his slam, leaving him lying in the ring. Now, I'm saying to myself, this has got to be the beginning of a Kevin Owens heel turn. This has got to be the beginning of Kevin Owens hitting rock bottom and saying, I'm tired of being Mr. Nice Guy and coming out and going on a fairly decent run as a heel. If that's the case, I am all for this. The very first thing I said to myself is, can you imagine a heel Kevin Owens against Damian Priest or against any number of people? This would be a great opportunity for Kevin Owens to really flex his chops again and be a heel and be that type of heel that he's very effective at being. Kevin Owens makes an okay face, but they never really exploited the true potential of Kevin Owens as a face, being that everyman sort of thing that they were going to do initially. And instead, he's just become a very lackadaisical, ineffective face. Now, maybe as a heel, he's not going to be lackadaisical and ineffective. And maybe that's the point they were trying to get through with this match is look at Kevin Owens. He doesn't have the passion anymore. Look at Kevin Owens. He doesn't have the drive anymore. And then we're going to see a brand new Kevin Owens who does very much have the passion and the drive, plus no more Mr. Nice Guy. If that's the case, Mike, then I'm all for that.
I'm all for it as well because, I mean, basically that's what they did with him when he first showed up in NXT when they had him flip on Sami Zayn. You know, and then they brought him up, and what did he do? The first thing he did was, well, I'm gonna use something that beat John Cena. You know, and then John Cena at the time was the biggest face in the company, right?
Right.
So
yeah, that would be a great thing.
Really good. Right. They really didn't try to get on with that because that could have made him a huge star, huge heel by beating John Cena. John Cena gave Cena the rub right there.
No, there's no question about that. No question about it. Now, if you're going to give me a heel Kevin Owens at his top of the game, if you're going to give me a top of his game, Damian Priest, a top of his game, Austin Theory. These are three people who could drive this federation. Seth Rollins is still there, top of his game. Dominic and Ray, Dominic is starting to come into his own a little bit, and we're probably, I don't care what Ray says, we're probably heading for a heel turn with Dominic. Or at least, if not a heel turn, at least a feud, even if it's a friendly feud. I'm starting to see some remnants of the old WWE where I say all of these characters went from not being interesting at all to kind of being interesting, and I'm anticipating certain matches or matchups that could happen. I don't know where Karrion Kross has been. But what I'm thinking is they realized his costume looks like it came out of the bargain bin at Party City. We've ruined him to a large extent. Give him a few weeks or a month off and get him back in here, and maybe we can revamp his image to a certain extent because we screwed up. And there's no doubt in anybody's mind that they screwed him up. If they can get him on the right ship, you've got a pretty good lineup there on Raw. You got a damn good lineup there on Raw, and you've got some people you're interested in. I'm much more interested in Kevin Owens as a heel. Flat out, just simple as that. Big E, I think, is making a good champion. I really do. Randy Orton and Riddle have done far better than I thought they were going to do. Far, far better. To the point where I thought this was just an exercise in get them together to break them up to have a feud. I don't think that's on the horizon. I really don't. I think they're just going to run with this for as long as they can. That might eventually happen, but I think they're going to run with this a while. They're starting to utilize the Dirty Dogs more, which is good because Ziggler and Roode are both excellent professional wrestlers and can put on great matches. I'm starting to get interested in where this thing's going with Otis and Chad Gable. Gable is very good on the mic, very good in the ring. Otis is a very, very foreboding figure. I mean, I didn't realize how big he was until he stood next to Big E, and my God, he's a monster, that guy. You could definitely promote him as a monster. You still got AJ Styles there as one of the greatest wrestlers on the planet. You're building up almost, even though he can't wrestle, you're still building him up to be an invincible sort of a giant. Now, you got this Veer Mahan, or whatever his name is, and he's already made his debut and stuff, so it's kind of silly that says coming to Raw soon, but it looks like you're going to take him seriously. I don't think he's going to go in there and get the hell kicked out of him by one, or him and, you know, by some guy. Remember when him and his and Jinder Mahal and then the other guy all got their asses kicked at once by Drew McIntyre? It don't look like they're going to do that this time with him. Looks like they've hit the reset button on him, and we might see something good. For the first time in a long time, let me tell you what the WWE's done. They've given you a champion that's beatable. In other words, when we have, like over in Roman Reigns, you know certain people ain't beating Roman Reigns. Quite a few people. When you had Brock Lesnar, you knew not just anybody was beating Brock Lesnar. Almost all the champions they had, you were like, yeah, they're not going to beat them. This guy's not beating them. This guy's not beating them. With Big E, you have a champion that you literally say, I don't know, man, they might take the belt off him, even if it's just transitionally to get it to somebody else that's a face. So now we're left in a situation where everybody that comes up against Big E, I'm saying, it's possible. It's not totally impossible that they take the belt off him. Mike, that is the key to what the WWE has changed, is they've given you a beatable face champion who you say he's always a little bit of the underdog.
Right. And even though he's a big guy, he's a big, strong, you know, athletic guy. Yeah, he's an underdog. When you've got guys like Beer and Shanky and Bearcat Lee and guys that are bigger than him, you know, that can get the job done. Yeah, he's a beatable guy. And look, here's the deal. Look at what's happening on NXT. Basically, Scarlett has all but disappeared.
Yep.
So that should tell you what's going to happen. If he's disappeared and she's disappeared, they're going to bring her up and probably put them back together at some point.
Yeah, I would like to see that, and I think you're right. I think they are going to do that. And if they do, you've got a pretty damn good lineup of interesting characters. You really do. The WWE's hit the reset button pretty damn hard here, and I have to give them credit for it. You know, I kill the WWE on a regular basis. We get on here, and we hold their feet to the fire like nobody else, to the point where there are people who really say, well, you're not really a WWE fan. You must hate the WWE. No, I don't. I just wanted them to wake up and give me something. Because they were giving me nothing. They were giving the fans nothing. They weren't even trying. Believe me when I tell you, they weren't even trying. They were on autopilot, just saying, eat what I give you. It's good enough. We're the only game in town. If AEW's done anything, maybe it's woken the WWE up a little bit. Because now when I watch Raw, I'm saying, I'm interested in some of this stuff. I'm interested in some upcoming feuds. I'm interested in how they're building characters. I think they're building characters correctly now. The only thing I do think the WWE's weak at, and they can correct this fairly easily, I would imagine, is I think they're a little bit weak when it comes to the women's tag team division and the women's division in general. But they can correct that. They've got all the women they need. If they really want to do it up, they can do it up. So I have to tell you that I don't think this is an A-plus show. But I enjoyed Raw. And each and every time I see them start to build the character a little bit better, even if I disagree with it, like the Damian Priest thing, I find it a little bit silly that he snaps and goes into this, I'm evil, I'm good, I'm Jekyll, I'm Hyde. I find that a little bit silly, but it's okay because at least they're building him. At least they're doing something to make him more interesting and harder to beat, and you're anticipating matches against people who could be more violent than him or more bloodthirsty than him, and they're making him a little more hardcore and willing to go to certain lengths. That's good. They're using Otis. They're using Chad Gable. They're using Finn Balor not as I'm Superman, which was so dumb. I used to hate that. I used to hate when Finn Balor was just like, I'm Superman. I can get in there against Otis and kick his ass. Well, that's just dumb. Now we're seeing, you know, Finn Balor is beatable too. Chad Gable came very close to beating him. Very, very close to beating him. So we're starting to see these guys used correctly to an extent. The Street Profits don't automatically win. The Dirty Dogs won. I mean, I bet you 90% of the people thought, Street Profits are going to win. Nope. I bet you 90% of people thought, Becky Lynch is going to get disqualified and somehow Bianca's going to win. Nope. We're starting to see them utilize their talent well. And all I can say, Todd, it's about goddamn time.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's about time. See, like teams like the Dirty Dogs and Chad Gable. You know, those matches with Finn Balor and everything, and it's about time you see a pretty good show.
Yeah, and it's about time you see them utilize their talent correctly. I really think that the WWE is on the right path, which makes me happy. Doesn't mean it's going to be an A-plus show every week. So I'm happy because I can now watch Raw and say, I'm anticipating some matches. I found myself for the first time in a long time, Mike, when they announced what the next match was, I'd be like, that's going to be good. I didn't know Chad Gable was going to fight Finn Balor, but I'm like, okay, well, that sounds good. Kevin Owens against Big E, I'm like, okay, well, that sounds good. Dirty Dogs against the Street Profits. That sounds good. And I'm looking at the lineup saying, you really tried this time. You put some very interesting matches together that I'm actually interested in watching. So you have to be appreciative at least for that.
Yeah, think about this also. They're also kind of setting up their tag team division. Now, if only they can find a way to get Shelton and Cedric Alexander back into the division, into where they're contenders, or at least if you have to put the Hurt Business back together to do it, fine, do it. You know, and also as far as women's wrestling, we're waiting. I'm still waiting to see what they're going to do with Asuka.
Right, because she's coming back soon. And again, we got Bobby Lashley coming back. That's going to be interesting. The 24/7 belt, they're doing something with that that's at least a little bit interesting, and that is something's going on with Drake Maverick. That's very obvious. Because in the midst of all this comedy, Drake Maverick, who's the funniest guy out of all of them probably, isn't being funny. He's being dead serious, so something's up. And at least we can anticipate that too, Mike, that they've got something planned here for this 24/7 belt that's not going to be just a comedic thing.
Right. And remember, what was it, a couple months back when he first showed up and he said, okay, I have this plan to get this away from this guy. Now, the plan didn't work.
Right.
But, you know, maybe they're trying to set him up as sort of a mastermind, you know, as to, okay, we're going to come up, you know, it's already a comedy thing. And basically, you look at, it kind of reminds me of a lot of the time when you used to watch Scooby-Doo. They would come up with these elaborate plans that a lot of times didn't work. Sometimes they did work, but a lot of times they didn't work. Maybe that's where they're headed with this thing. They're going to keep doing the comedy bit, but it's a more of a serious comedy bit because if you think about it, like I said, the Scooby-Doo thing was the plans were serious. The plans to catch the, well, let's call it what they were, the ghosts were serious, but a lot of the times they didn't work, right?
Yeah, and this time again, you see Drake Maverick, who's funny and normally excels at being funny, not being funny, which means it's going somewhere. Going somewhere. Now, I would recommend that they just make Tozawa and R-Truth a tag team. They're always at each other's throats, but they kind of begrudgingly like each other, and it might be fun to see them actually be a tag team. Tozawa is a very talented wrestler, and R-Truth has still got a lot of go in him. Okay, they don't have to be tag team champions, but they could put on some good matches. Anyway, what are we going to give this Raw? Well, I'll tell you. I was very entertained by it. I scratched my head at the girls watching the monitor backstage that aren't tag team champions. That makes no sense. Yes, I'm not that big of a fan anymore of these contender matches because the contender always wins because all it's really there for is to set up the next contender. That I didn't like too much. But I got to tell you, I was entertained through most of this whole thing. I enjoyed most all of this. And I certainly thought that the matches and the quality of the matches were pretty damn high, even in matches which didn't make much sense, like the tag team women's match, it still was a good match. So I'm going to give this an A-. I think they're on the right track. I think they've become a lot more entertaining in the last couple of weeks, and they were so entertaining, I forgot, no AJ Styles, no Bobby Lashley. Now think about that for a minute. No AJ Styles, no Bobby Lashley. Those are two big names. And you still pulled off a really fun show, a really enjoyable wrestling show. So, I mean, I have to say, as much as we're tough on WWE, you got to be fair. And I think they're heading in the right direction.
I think they're headed in the right direction as well. And I got to give it an A- as well. And think about this. I mean, look. When Tozawa was running around with the ninjas, right? Now, we've asked the question, where are the ninjas? But think about this. They had almost as a 7-foot tall, 400-pound ninja, right? When everybody knows ninjas aren't that big and they're nimble and all that stuff. Now, they could probably get away with having R-Truth as a ninja.
Yeah, they probably could. And do they still have, you know, I'm starting to wonder. I know they don't have Tony Nese on the roster anymore, but they do have some other guys that were in that 24/7 hunt for a while that we haven't seen. And I think they're still on Raw. I mean, to a certain extent, if you're going to make this, this is almost like a 205 Live, Mike, because most of the guys, R-Truth is a little heavier, but most of the guys involved in this hunt for this 24/7 belt are smaller guys.
Right. And if you look at it, I mean, yeah. And even the current champion, he's not that big of a guy.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and basically that's why you look at him, that's why he can do what he does. Now, they need to maybe get the championship off of him, and I think that's where this whole thing with that's where this whole thing is going, because at some point one of these plans that Drake Maverick, you know, one of these plans that he comes up with is going to work, and they're going to end up getting that championship off of him, you know, and putting him on somebody else, and maybe taking Reggie off TV for a short amount of time to maybe give him some more training, you know, which is a good idea. But that's where this thing is headed with, I think, with, because eventually, if you watch Scooby-Doo, eventually one of those plans in any given episode eventually worked to capture the whatever the ghost was at the time or whatever, end quote, ghost was. So I think that's where this is headed, that what, at some point, one of these plans, whatever it is that Drake Maverick, who's a serious part of the thing right now, is going to work, and they're going to get that title off of, Reggie.
Yeah, I just think they might get it off him in a serious way that might not. Why do I feel like something's going to happen that's going to make Reggie, R-Truth, and Tozawa sort of like the faces in this, and Maverick the heel, where even though they wanted that belt, they say to him, you went too far, or you know, you should have done that. Or, and we might even see, you know, could you imagine Drake Maverick against Tozawa? I'd watch that match. Or Drake Maverick even against R-Truth would be a decent match. You have some potential there for a minor match and a minor feud that could be interesting if you do it the right way. So you could make this 24/7 belt interesting to some degree with those characters. At least they're trying. That's what it feels like to me. It feels like the WWE woke up and said, we got to try again. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I'm going to give it an A- as well.
Yeah, look, this was a highly enjoyable episode. I'm telling you right now that there are people – I really like Austin Theory's character. I think it's going to be a great heel. I'm very much liking – I've always liked Otis, and I was very much against making him a heel because I thought the fans loved him as a face. But you could make that guy a pretty damn good heel. I think Randy Orton's doing an excellent job and getting Riddle over. I think Omos is probably going to go somewhere, even though the matches aren't going to be any good. Bobby Lashley's coming back, and we're going to see that. MVP is going to be coming back with him soon. You're going to see that. I think Raw's going to take on a pretty damn good road. And that, I think, is probably the best news WWE fans could hope for. We'll see you Friday.
You're listening to Wrestle Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.